don't mind shitty setup. Like, shitty setup is like what's given me half of the bad horror movies that I love and adore to this day. As long as the execution is done right and you give me the fucking goods, baby. Don't, dude. This movie's a prude, man. This movie did not put out. It's a prude. I paid that much money for my date, and that I didn't even get a French kiss, man. Not even second base with this motherfucker. That's what this movie is. It's a prude.
The Epic Film Dies Podcast.
Welcome, film fans, to a very special Epic Film Guys mini-sode. It's been a few weeks since you've heard my voice and my good friend Loy Sauce's voice. We figured we would check in here. As of right now, this recording date, episode 200 has yet to hit your eardrums, but that's still on the way. We really wanted to make that one special. I know Nick is dragging his feet a little bit. I was dragging my feet a little bit with the 4th of July holiday upon us this last week. It's kind of tough to get everybody together to sit down and record, but I did release my Jaws filming locations video on our YouTube channel, so if you have not had a chance to check that out, please peep it out. Please comment, share it, like it, tell us what you think. That was kind of your 4th of July special treat, if you will. But all of that aside, Jaws aside, as much as I'd love to talk about Jaws again, that reminds me, Brian, Jaws 2, Jaws 3, Jaws the Revenge, some B-sides could happen out of those, buddy. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I am joined by the God of Podcasting, a.k.a. Loy Sauce. Loin Sauce, what's up, man?
How's it going, Justin? Happy post-4th of July-ish weekend.
Yeah, it was great, man. You actually came over and we did our annual watch of I Know What You Did Last Summer, and I actually commented to you. I said another B-side opportunity wasted, because that's a movie that you and I both really enjoy, and I feel like we could talk about that and have a lot of fun with that. But I'm feeling great. Still on my 4-day weekend right now, so I'm pumped to have another day or two left of that. But we are here, Brian, to talk about a movie we saw a few weeks ago, so we're a little bit late to the game on this, but we saw it in the theaters together. We're talking about Annabelle Comes Home. Yes, the third in the Annabelle trilogy, if you will, as part of the...
Sure, although they're going to make 50 more, so it doesn't... I mean, it's the seventh in the Conjuring film series overall.
So, for those uninitiated out there that are listening, if you are happening to listen to an Annabelle episode without knowing anything about it, Loy Sauce, tell our listeners what Annabelle Comes Home is all about.
Absolutely. So the film opens with the famous demonologist Ed and Lorraine Warren, played by Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, respectively. It's a flashback to the first Conjuring movie, where we see them meet the possessed Annabelle doll for the first time, and they take it back home and lock it in a cupboard behind sacred glass, and enlisting a priest to give it a holy blessing so that it can't wreak any more havoc. But, the daughter of the Warrens, Judy, played by McKenna Grace, is being babysat by Mary Ellen, played by Madison Eisman, and her obnoxious friend, Daniela Rios, played by Katie Sarife.
I'm going with that one.
Comes over and, I guess curiosity gets the better of her. We learn a little bit more about her character and why she does this, but of course a horror movie has to happen. So she takes Annabelle out of the case and awakens the evil spirits in the room. And as I always like to say on this show, hijinks ensue.
Yes. They sure do ensue, and I don't know how to feel about this. I don't know how to go any further without just jumping right in here. I thought this movie was pretty bad, Brian. I was extremely, extremely disappointed by it. Those that have listened to the show and have heard my thoughts and opinions on this Conjuring universe overall, I love the first Conjuring. The second Conjuring, I think, is one of the best horror movies of the past 10 years. And the first Annabelle, solo Annabelle movie, I was extremely disappointed by it. I thought it was a really badly put together movie. I thought it was about as pedestrian as they come. And then here comes Annabelle Creation. which came out 2 years ago. And Brian, I don't know if you remember or not, but that movie actually blew me away. I thought it the precision and the scares.
It
the
blew
atmosphere,
you away?
Yeah, man. I thought it was fantastic because I had no expectations for it based on the fact that the first one was so bad. I literally went, you forced me to go. You don't remember, but you actually were like, come on, dude, we'll go. We'll get in for free and go watch it. You should go. And I was like, man, another Annabelle. So I had no expectations. And that movie, very, very good. Very solid horror movie with great scares. Like I said, it ain't all the kills I want. I mean, these movies are very low in the kill count, but it hit where it counts. And this movie was boring. I swear to God, I fell asleep during a part in this movie, which never happens. The last time I fell asleep during a movie was The Blair Witch Project, and that was when I was in high school because that movie is boring.
All right, well, we can talk about that another time. I'm a Blair Witch Project fan, but
I know you are.
We can set that aside.
I was getting, you know, a little uneven jab in your side just to see what you would say to that, but
yeah, I mean, those of you who know me know that I love the Conjuring movies. That is to say, James Wan's Conjuring movies, 1 and 2. I think The Conjuring 2 especially is like a masterpiece. It's one of my favorites. So I understand what they're trying to do with this Conjuring universe. And I don't think it's a particularly bad idea. You know, give these up and coming directors these like mid-budget level horror movies. You know, have it be all kind of connected. I think that's a very interesting idea. But these spinoff movies have had very hit or miss, I'll say, effects on me. So this latest one, Annabelle Comes Home, is probably one of the worst of them. It might be the worst outside of the first Annabelle, which I know that we both hated. So
but here's the one thing we're going to get to this though. The first Annabelle actually has something in it that this movie lacks completely. That's completely absent from it. And we're going to get to that when we get to the actual things that work in this movie, which those things are very rare because they're barely there.
Yeah. And the movie starts out pretty well too. I liked the fact that it started with Ed and Lorraine Warren. And I feel like the movie kind of deflates once they leave the picture. And then when they come back at the very end, you're like, oh, like,
marketing ploy.
You know, yeah, you're like,
put them on
this.
The posters, put them in the trailer. They're heavy in the trailer. You're like, oh, I remember even commenting to you after we saw the trailer for like the first time. We're like, oh, they're going to be in it? Okay. Wow. All right. Maybe I'm going to go check this thing out. And though we're going to see it anyway, whatever. But at least give us a little bit, a glimpse of maybe some kind of hope that it's going to be decent.
Yeah, it's a glorified cameo. But it starts out really well, especially because they established a Halloween setting, a fall setting that's very appealing visually. And you kind of get the sense that they're going to play off of the Halloween imagery a little bit throughout the film. They don't really do anything with that. We get to know a little bit about the characters and they're setting up these characters and their backstories. And then they also start diving into the Warren's case files. They snoop around in the Warren's study and go through all these dossiers of characters that are going to appear, of course, later on. You know, the ferryman, the hellhound, like all of these, you know, horror iconography and characters that they're setting up early on. And I thought all of that worked really, really well. The moment the movie falls apart is we get to the second act and it's just interminable characters wandering around a house and something occasionally jumps out at them. It's incredibly monotonous and boring and stale and bland.
I think that was my biggest problem with it, Brian. In these types of movies, I need a breather. Believe it or not, I need a breather. I think it's required when you're trying to scare your audience, when you're trying to get those creeps and bumps to affect the audience and make them jump. You need to give us time to breathe. We need some light to contrast the dark. And the fact that the whole movie took place in the house without any kind of breathing room around it made it kind of boring because you never gave us time to take a breath in between the attempts at scares. Now, I think there was probably 2 decent scares in this entire movie.
Maybe.
One actually made me jump. Legitimately. So I have to give it credit there. Like I literally jumped. It was very well timed. It was precise, but that was it. Like, that's the only credit I can give it. Now, I think performances all around are pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I think the girl that plays Daniela, Katie Sarif is what I'm going to call her. Sorry if I got it wrong. Don't really care because she's probably not ever going to go anywhere in her career. But I thought she was so awful in the movie. She was obnoxious. I know the character is written to be that way. Like, she's the annoying girl that, well, we wouldn't have the movie without her, because if we didn't have that stupid character go into the room that says, don't go in here, you even have to go. She even had to go, Brian, and find the keys to get into the room to unlock it. And then when she gets in there, she opens the one thing that says do not open on it. I mean stupid horror character 101. I get it, we have to have that character in the movie.
Yeah, and then two things. I mean, first of all, I think you are supposed to get the impression that there's some kind of demonic influence kind of possessing her to unlock the
crate,
unlock the case. And secondly, we do get some character backstory to this Daniela character. She lost her dad suddenly in a tragic car accident, and she's desperately trying to have closure with her father. So she wants to call on the other side to perhaps, you know, reconnect with her father's ghost. Which, again, I understand what they were going for with that, and I like the fact that they even tried to do that, because, you know, even a lot of other horror movies probably wouldn't have even tried to have, you know, a complex character relationship with that character. But it's just, it would pay off a lot more if it weren't, it literally the entire second and third acts of this movie are just endless quiet, 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 bang. Quiet, 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 bang.
And it's all stuff we've seen before.
Over and over.
It's all stuff we've seen before.
It's all stuff we've seen before, although they do try to introduce these new characters, I guess, so they can all spin off into their own separate film. Maybe we'll get a Hellhound movie. Maybe we'll get a Ferryman movie.
Or The Bloody Bride, yeah.
The Bloody Bride is an image ripped off of Walt Disney's The Haunted Mansion, shamelessly.
You had to go there. I knew you were going to go there. I know how big of a fan you are of that ride, which I love as well. But I know you're a hardcore fan of the ride, so I knew you were going to bring that up.
It's my favorite thing ever. So they have the bride with the knife, except in The Haunted Mansion, it's an axe. But that's, again, something we've seen that before.
Well, I just wanted to comment real quick, Brian, not to cut you off there, but that imagery is extremely close in terms of the visual look to it than what we just saw in The Curse of La Llorona a few months ago, in April.
Literally 2 months
which
ago.
Which is the superior film. That movie was very well done, and that came, just like this one did, from a newcoming, up-and-coming director. That was his first time directing a major motion picture, Michael Chaves, and he did a great job. Thank heavens, because he's going to be directing The Conjuring 3. In this case, this is an up-and-coming new director, Gary Doberman, who he actually co-wrote this with James Wan. It was his first movie he directed, and not a good entry to jump out the door with, but...
Well, James Wan did story. He didn't actually have anything to do with the actual screenplay itself. But yes, Gary Doberman did write and direct this movie. And he's been a writer on other films in the franchise, as well as It. He was a co-screenwriter on It. So, I mean, he has pedigree, and he's going to be writing the upcoming Salem's Lot movie. So he has horror pedigree. He's just... I think a lot of it has to do with just the fact that what this is a haunted house ride. It's a dark ride. You go in your little cart and you go around the house, and occasionally something jumps out at you, and then you move on to the next thing. There's no rise and fall of scares. There's no interesting like character work or drama to go
there's
along
also
with it.
No suspense at all.
No suspense.
It lacks suspense in every way.
Well, there's one scene that would have been pretty intense had we not seen it in the trailer, but that's the thing. Like, there's just no it's literally just quiet, quiet, bang. That's the extent of the scares in this movie, and it gets infuriating after a while. Actually, it doesn't even get infuriating, it's just boring.
I find this hilarious because literally like 20 minutes into the movie, I turned to you and I said, this is lame, and you were like, shut up.
Well,
I'm enjoying it so far. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, 20 minutes after that, you're looking at me like I was right, and God damn it, I was.
Okay, well, they were still setting stuff up, and I was still enjoying it up to that point.
I told you so.
Well, okay, you did tell me so, but I didn't have to, like, lean over to you 20 minutes into the movie and say, this sucks, because there's still, like, an hour and 10 or hour and 15 minutes left of the movie. So, anyway.
It would have had a huge uphill battle at that point, and it did, and it did not succeed.
Something that would have been interesting and something that kind of had a lot of hype on the horror sites that I follow was this Hellhound character. It's essentially, for all intents and purposes, a werewolf. And I was really interested and intrigued. You see it on the poster. It's like, how is this werewolf going to play into the proceedings? And it doesn't do anything at all.
And based on that article that Bloody Disgusting did, it was a guy in a practical werewolf suit that looked amazing. And the guy claimed that all the stuff he did on set was practical, that it was not a CGI werewolf or hellhound, if you will. And unfortunately, in the movie, they may have used him as a placeholder, but they totally CGI'd over him if they actually used him in any way, because it's all CG and it's not good CG. It's bad CG. It was so disappointing to see that. And when the werewolf gets hit, he turns into a poof cloud of smoke.
Yeah, it dissipates into smoke. That's the other thing, is that this movie is just completely devoid of any real stakes, because, like, okay, so what happens if the hellhound, like, is chasing after this person and it catches up to them? Like, it doesn't do any physical harm to them. Same thing with, at one point, Daniela gets stabbed by the ghost
of
the
bride.
That was
one of the biggest disappointments for me, because I was like, man, that bitch gotta die. And she lives.
So she gets stabbed, and you and I kind of looked at each other like, oh, like, that's,
well, you're
that happened.
Well, finally, you're gonna have some balls here. And that leads me to one thing, Brian. Three words. Bob's got balls.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they introduced this.
I can't help it. It was funny hearing them say it, but like the fourth or fifth time, I'm like, okay, dude, you've already surpassed the amount of time you should be saying that.
So yeah. So they introduced this side character named Bob, and he's like a complete like dork and doofus, wet blanket like dweeby character. And he's the one who is being chased around by the hellhound. But he's not really connected to anything that happens. He just kind of shows up at the house.
Well, he shows up to try to have a date. Because earlier on, when the girls are in the store getting groceries for the birthday celebration, he's there. He's the one that's ringing them out. And he's got this chemistry going on. Hey, you never know what's going to happen there. So he goes there to kind of try to woo her, if you will. And then he takes his guitar and he's like doing, it's almost like a say anything moment where he's out there and he's playing his guitar. And
okay, great. So in any other horror movie, this would be a character that would be set up for the body count. But there's no body
100%.
Count in these movies.
Yeah.
There's no body count. So what's the point of introducing him in the first place? What's the point of... I'm going to go back to this, but what's the point of making this elaborate, beautiful, awesome looking werewolf costume if you don't even see the hellhound throughout hardly any of the movie? And then when he does snap out, it's CGI and then it dissipates into smoke. Like, what a waste. Like, what a waste of time and our time and our money and their time in making this werewolf costume that they're not even going to use or show on screen.
Especially when you help promote the movie using actual photos of the guy in the suit that looks really good. And knowing that the website publishing this is Bloody Disgusting, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, horror website in the world. And every horror fan's going to see that. Well, werewolf? Like, werewolves, you don't see them anymore in movies, dude. They're very rare. And especially to get a good practical werewolf, a guy in a costume, man, I would have eaten that shit up. This movie might have even gotten a point or two more on my scale if they had had a real guy in a werewolf suit and actually utilized him a little bit, made him a little scary. I mean, the Bob's Got Balls kid, because apparently the only reason why he's called Bob's Got Balls, I was hoping the whole time it meant because... he had balls and he was a badass or something, or he
well, that's
hated
kind
lots
of what
of
they do at the end.
Oh, it's just because I, you know, I help the sport, whatever team it is, basketball team or some shit, or football team, and I help them with the balls. I'm like, that's the lamest shit I've ever fucking heard.
Well, they set it up as like,
yeah,
like he's a dweeb, and then at the end of the movie, he comes in kind of does something that makes the other characters go, oh, he's actually got balls. So, but he's so far removed from the other characters throughout the rest of the movie, so separated from them that it doesn't pay off.
Here's the one thing, though, that I did like about this movie. And like I said, there's very few things. The fact that he is a bumbling idiot. The fact that the female characters are at the center in this movie. There are three central characters, and they take care of things all on their own. They don't need a male character in there to really help. Bob doesn't really do much to help them in any way or try to save the day. He's kind of like he literally is like, they telegraphed this shit to the audience. He's hiding in a chicken coop. What the fuck does that tell you?
Right.
You know, like, I mean, the character is not a strong male character.
That's all well and good. I like the fact that it was a female driven movie. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm going to make another point here, and I would consider myself a feminist. So if you're like going to get all up in arms about this, feel free to do so. But it's my personal opinion. These movies have literally zero sex appeal at all. Like, I feel like these movies don't have like any like grit or any like blood coursing through their veins. They're all very like cold and sterile. It's like watching the horror equivalent of a Star Wars prequel, where it's like, do these characters even like have sex drives? Do these characters like actually feel anything other than like fear sometimes? I guess. I don't know. It's just like, these are very like sexless and bloodless movies. And I'm not saying that in that like I want them to like show titties and
yes you do.
And, well, I mean, I do, but
you want to see tits?
Well, sure, but I'm saying that like I don't need explicit sex scenes and gore for a horror movie to be good, but there needs to be a little something in there, a little bit. Like, why is this movie rated R? This could have been a PG rated film if they had tweaked a couple things.
Brian, there's barely any bad language in the movie.
There's none. They say shit a couple times.
That's what I'm saying. There's not a lot of F-bombs. There is no nudity at all. There's like no blood in it. There's no major gore. There's no decapitations. Nothing.
It's not even like there's no nudity. It's like they're all wearing turtlenecks and like really unflattering clothing.
Well, I mean, it's 1968, dude. Whatever. what do you? I mean, here's okay. Another thing. Gonna jump off, piggyback off what you're saying there, and I'm gonna say something else positive because, like I said, whatever. I liked the costuming. I liked the period detail. Going back to what you said earlier on with them in the store when they meet Bob's Got Balls. That store was done perfectly. It felt like you were in a grocery store. You know, the attention to detail on the aisles with the cereal and everything you see, and
it's all decorated for Halloween.
The Halloween decorations.
Halloween never comes into play.
Why couldn't this movie have been, Brian? Tell me this. If they're going to show you that and be like, oh, this is taking place near Halloween, why not just make it on Halloween and then have like trick-or-treaters coming to the door that then see what the demons and spirits and everything and then interact? That'd be way cooler. Missed opportunity. Like, why even set it up and show that stuff if you're not going to, you know, follow through with it?
Absolutely. So, but you understand what I'm saying, right? About these feeling like children's films, like,
This movie's pedestrian, Brian. This movie is the lowest grade. It's the bottom of the barrel. It's the bare minimum that you have to give to give a pass. And you know what? I had a feeling that this movie wasn't going to be successful. I really had a feeling, you know what? It's going to beat out Child's Play, unfortunately, which I wanted to do much better. But as I looked earlier, I mean, this movie's already at 90 million internationally. Now, I don't see the production budget or anything, but it made already $43 million in the States. So altogether, almost $100 million. I guarantee the budget was like 15, 20, something along that.
It's saying estimated $27 to $32 million. So, I mean,
27? What were they spending their money on to make it 27? You're in a house the whole time.
You know what a majority of that was probably for? Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga.
You're totally right. I stand corrected.
They got their paychecks.
We'll come back. Half an hour tops. We'll work for a week. Here's sign the check. There it is.
Which is so sad because again, the Conjuring movies are classy. Like they're incredibly, they don't look cheap at all. They're genuinely spooky. you know? And again, there's rise and fall and there's drama. Like The Conjuring 2 had that whole aspect of the Warrens like being investigated for being frauds. And I'm like, that's a really interesting element to explore. There's nothing like that in any of these solo movies. It's like The Nun. It's just interminable characters walking down hallways with a flashlight or a lantern, and occasionally something jumps out at them.
Did you ever think, I have to ask you, did you ever think that we would be sitting in a theater after watching a horror movie and saying that The Nun was probably better than the movie we just watched?
The Nun was way better because the production design exactly. in that movie. And like,
and we thought that movie was a disappointment. We gave that movie a failed rating as well. That movie was a failed rating, but we're still saying The Nun is better than this.
It's just, it's sad. It's a sad state of affairs. But you know, they're going to keep making these movies because obviously they're very successful. They have the name brand recognition. They're not scary enough to be like inaccessible to most audiences. They are R for just some like baffling reason. Like what, this easily could have been PG-13. Easily. This why was it R?
This isn't even nearly as scary as the original Poltergeist, even in comparison now. If you took a kid, sat him down on the couch and had a kid that never watched any horror movie, Poltergeist, they'd be way scared or way more scared of Poltergeist than they would with Annabelle Comes Home and Falls Flat. You know, it was a huge disappointment for me. Like, and again, there are things, minor things that are positive about, like I said, I think that the performances, particularly from McKenna Grace, who plays Judy Warren, I think she's very good in the movie, and she's a very adorable character. And you feel for her a lot because she's being picked on in school. She's got basically no friends. The kids at school are calling her parents frauds. It's her birthday weekend, and for some strange reason, Brian, her parents are leaving to go investigate something on their daughter's birthday.
I thought that was weird.
What's totally nonsensical to me is that they would ever, I repeat, ever leave their kid with anybody in that house with that secret room that's locked up. Like, oh, well, there's a lock on it. Like, they're never going to go in there.
Well, and then, in the original Conjuring, they have a family member who understands like that there's a room that you should absolutely not go in. Like, they have a family member watch over Judy in the first movie, so it doesn't really make any sense that they would hire a babysitter, but it's fine. Like, the setup of it is fine. I don't mind shitty setup.
Like, shitty setup is like what's given me half of the bad horror movies that I love and adore to this day. As long as the execution is done right and you give me the fucking goods, baby. Don't, dude, this movie's a prude, man. This movie did not put out. It's a prude. I paid that much money for my date, and that I didn't even get a French kiss, man. Not even second base with this motherfucker. That's what this movie is. It's a prude.
Absolutely. And again, not just even like, I wasn't expecting like sex scenes or gore in this movie, but just like the characters don't like. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I feel like you know what I'm saying, Justin. When I see a horror movie, I want there to be more than just boo. Like, I need a little something to keep me going.
No, I agree with you. I mean, and again, I understand where they were going with this. They sat down at the table and they said, let's just do a scare 'em up. Like you said perfectly earlier on, it's a haunted house movie. It is a dark ride. And I love dark rides. And I love cheap ghost stories. I love cheap ghost haunted house movies, as long as they're well done. When one of your main scares is something we've seen in literally every single other haunted doll movie, where the kid's under the covers and lifts the covers and the doll comes charging, you know, fast towards her face, that's so uninspired. Like, I've seen it in so many other movies and done way, way better. The one scare that I liked is when the black demon,
which again, we've seen in the other movies.
We did, but front faced. I jumped, like, so you got me there. And I love that black demon. I'm like, man, why are you putting this thing in this movie if you're not going to do more with it? Like, that should have been the main villain the entire time, because that imagery is fucking scary, dude. That gets into your mind, dude. I have nightmares of that imagery.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, it's missed opportunity throughout the whole film. You have a werewolf that you're not going to do anything with. You have a black demon who's going to show up for 2 seconds. It's just, again, like, at least Dark Rides last for like 4 minutes, and this lasted for 94 minutes. So it's like,
and what was up with like the whole, she has to go in like a labyrinth with all these people with like the coins on their eyes. And I mean, I liked the sentient samurai suit. That was some really awesome imagery, but they don't really do anything with that at all.
The samurai suit turns on its own, and that's all it does. The ferryman, the people with the coins over their eyes, there's one point where she has to retrieve something, an amulet, or what does she have to retrieve from the...
I'm pretty sure. Let's just go with that, Brian. Anyway, seriously.
She has to retrieve
that's
something.
That's how good of viewers we are.
She has to retrieve something from a woman with the coins over her eyes, and she's, you know, laying there motionless, dead. And so she grabs the amulet, and she's trying to take it out of the corpse's hands. And all of a sudden, the corpse comes alive and screams at her, and then she runs away. And it's like, oh.
Like,
there's no threat. There's no stakes. There's no nothing. Like, what happens if the corpse were to chase after her and get her? Would she die? Like, clearly not, because we've never seen any of these characters die. You know what? At least in Annabelle Creation, a young child gets hit by a car in the opening seconds of the movie. At least in The Nun, you know, we have that woman hang herself at the beginning of the
movie.
Which
is a great opening. Amazing opening, actually.
So it's like, you know, you have the potential to have, like, characters, you know, die or get hurt, but, like, not in, like...
Stakes, people! Stakes! Make them high! It's supposed to be a horror movie.
That's why I said that I feel like this is a horror movie for babies. It's like baby's first horror movie. That's what these movies are.
Brian, I'm really just going to start wrapping up my thoughts here, and then we're going to get to our final thoughts and our ratings on this. But one of the more interesting aspects of this movie I felt was completely wasted, which was Judy Warren's character. How this character, as a young girl, deals with seeing these spirits, these demons, living in this house. The movie started off in a really interesting direction with seeing the ghost priest at her school, following her around. What's it like to be a young girl dealing with all the normal teenage issues and everything else, and then having to deal with that as well? And that was something that I was like, man, this is interesting. Like, that could be a whole movie on all into itself if they had done it right. But another huge missed opportunity here. The character is subjected to just being scared in her room, when I'm like, you live with this shit, man. You should be the one that's like, you know, telling them where to go, what to do. I mean, she kind of does in a way help out and navigate things, and in the end helps solve the problem. But I mean, for me, that would have been the movie I would have preferred to see, because I'm like, okay, this is an interesting character. Give me more of that. Flesh this idea out.
Yeah, I mean, the movie's not interested in anything like that. The movie just wants to go boo and make you jump. You know, and going back to like stakes, I mean, really the only thing that happens in this movie is that, okay, Daniela takes Annabelle out of the case, and then they have to put Annabelle back in the case.
Pretty simple, you think,
and then,
right?
Like, that's it. That's it. That's the only thing this movie has to offer. There's no drama. There's no nothing. What you just said, I would watch that movie. I think that sounds like a way more interesting movie than what we got. So,
yeah,
you know.
Teen drama, kid having demons and ghosts in their house. What's it like to have parents that do? I mean, like I said, they touch on it. Like, the newspaper that she sees when she's eating cereal in the morning with their parents' picture, and it says frauds on it. Like, I want that's some good character work. There's a lot you could do with that. There's a lot you could flesh out with that character. And again, that character is completely pushed aside. And we've got some, I mean, the main teenage chick, she's the main teenage lead. She's attractive. I mean, whatever. Mary Ellen's attractive.
You could have these like, there was Titty back in Halloween in 1978. Like, make these characters have some sort of, like, you know, like, introduce Bob. Okay, so there's a love interest there, but then, like, have them, like, kiss
fool
at least
around
once,
or something. Fool around. Have them fool around on the fucking the chicken coop, and then have the werewolf come in. Then add suspense. Then add some scary moments. Like, literally. That's what we want, people. If you're listening, you're not listening to us, but if you are, that's what we want. And the mainstream audience that liked this movie already, that loved it, that walked out loving it, will love it even more. So you're going to give us all what we want. You know
what
I'm saying?
It's going to be R-rated anyway.
Why the hell not? I mean, that's literally it, though, Brian. I there's nothing more I want to talk about. Annabelle Comes Home and Falls Flat. Fuck this movie. Seriously, huge disappointment. I said all the positives I could. I didn't want to just come on here and bash it. I wanted to, you know, do a very fair retrospective of what I saw a few weeks ago. But overall,
the first 25 minutes or half hour or whatever are very good in setting up what is. It's very good at setting up.
I'd say it's okay at setting up.
It's very good at setting up what is an extremely disappointing second and third act where literally nothing happens. So these movies are a dark ride, but like when you're on the ride, you can like hear like the wheels squeaking and the gears grinding together. You can see the duct tape like holding the scary props and creatures up. Like you can smell the flop sweat of the desperate producers trying to put this together. It's just so like the series, if it keeps going at this rate, I mean, it's been hit or miss. I didn't see the entire thing of La Llorona. I watched maybe the first half or three quarters.
I really liked that movie. I gave that high marks, man. That's a 7 out of 10, man. That was a good horror movie. There's some nonsensical shit in there, but the scares are precise. There's amazing imagery in it. This movie had none of that. Like, you can't even give me a cool shot with like the doll at the end of the hall and like some cool lighting. No. It's all boring. This movie's uninspired as hell. Well, and it's amateurish as well.
And it's dark as hell too. Like there were times where I couldn't even see what was going on screen because like the lighting is just extremely poor. Granted, we did see it in a pretty awful theater, but
yeah, Brian, I agree with you on that. We shouldn't necessarily say that unless we want to watch this movie again in a better theater, which we won't, but because we saw it in Starplex and Starplex is garbage.
Starplex is garbage, but like the werewolf scenes, like I couldn't even, like if you have a werewolf costume, again, if you have a werewolf costume, a fully functional werewolf suit, like why shroud it in complete and utter darkness?
We get it, Brian. Is that what you want for Christmas this year? Do you want me to get you a guy to come visit you in a werewolf costume and scare you outside of your house?
I just want a good werewolf movie, or at least a good movie featuring a werewolf. This movie certainly was not that.
So before we give our final ratings, which I'm going to push you to right now, did a girl sitting next to you fall asleep during this movie?
Yes, she did. Yep. And you fell asleep too.
I rest my case. That's it for me, Brian. I'm giving this movie, Annabelle Comes Home and Falls Flat, a 3 out of 10 rating. This movie is a disgrace to horror films. It's not fun, like some of my other horror friends have said. It's not fun because it's boring. It's completely lackluster. It's generic. It's the bottom of the barrel. It's uninspired. It's amateurish. Nothing about this movie won me over at all. That's it. 3 out of 10 for me. Loy Sauce, let's get it, buddy.
I'm going to fall in lockstep with you, Justin. 3 out of 10.
How dare you copy your daddy? Damn it. I'm going to get the belt out right now and come over there. Is that what you want?
I would rather be whipped with a belt than watch Annabelle Comes Home again.
I can agree with that, actually. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. We are not recommending this movie. Even if you like the other ones, I would skip this one. When The Curse of La Llorona comes out on Blu-ray or home video, I keep saying home video, like people still go to the store and rent
video cassette tape. What? You know what else?
Video cassette, yeah.
You know what else pisses me off about this movie? It did nothing to further the Conjuring universe at all. The only thing it was designed to do was introduce things that could potentially have their own spinoff movies.
Sure.
But like, there's no, it's not like this is like a connecting piece to, you know, the in between the Conjuring movies. It's not like this leads into the Conjuring 3. Literally nothing of interest happens in this movie that furthers the universe. It's completely inessential. If you were to skip this one, you would not miss anything.
It's a placeholder, and it is what it is. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for our mini-sode review of Annabelle Comes Home and Falls Flat. Don't watch this movie, and if you do, if you like it, I'd love to hear why, and I want a full essay, a full four-paragraph essay.
With footnotes.
Footnotes.
And appendices.
Explain to me why this movie was good, because for me, I watch these movies year in and year out. If it's a haunted house, there's a ghost, a doll, whatever, I'll watch it. I might love it, as long as you do it well. I'm not a guy that hates on one type of horror genre. I'll watch all of them. That's it. So, Loy Sauce, until next time, I am Epic Film Guy Justin.
And this is Loy Sauce.
And we will see you at the movies.